Thank you very much for this kind introduction, and of course, fortiori, thank you very much for this wonderful invitation. It's really a great pleasure to be here with you. I have to say, I feel a little bit like the odd guy in the panel, because yes, it's true, I am a professor of law, like some other of my fellow panelists, and yes, it's true, I am the founding director of the Brexit Institute at DCU, but I am a professor of EU law, and I don't have any special expertise in the field of the common law. In fact, I think I am actually the only panelist who qualified as a lawyer in a civil law jurisdiction. And by the way, one big advantage of civil law is that you can be a solicitor and a barrister at the same time. So with that said, I think what I will try to do in my small remarks is to somehow complement and perhaps qualify some of the other presentation by trying to point out what Brexit might mean for the development of EU law itself. So I would really take here more the perspective of an EU lawyer trying to see how Ireland and Irish law might continue to remain relevant within the context of the European Union. Essentially, what I will try to argue is three things. The first one is that, to a large extent, there is little reason to fear for Irish lawyers that Brexit will fundamentally change the EU legal order. The reason being that, in fact, to a large extent, EU law is more similar to a common law jurisdiction than it is to a civil law jurisdiction. Secondly, I will make the case that actually Ireland is already highly influential in the development of EU law. And considering its size, I would even say Ireland is punching above its weight. And I will try to provide some example of legal areas where actually the law and practice of this jurisdiction has been highly important in the development of European law. And third and finally, I will try to make the provocative case that actually the UK departure from the EU may make Ireland's standing within the European Union and EU law specifically even higher. So let me start off with the very first point where I said, which as I said has to do with, if I were to paraphrase Mark Twain, the news of my death have been greatly exaggerated. I would also say the news of the death of the common law are definitely greatly exaggerated. That has to do with the fact that, ironically enough, even if the founding member states of the European Union were all civil law jurisdiction, the reality is that since a very early stage, EU law started developing in ways which are much more similar to the common law tradition than to the civil law tradition. If you think about it, the two foundational principles of the EU legal order, the principles of direct effect and of supremacy, are still to these days based on judgments of the European Court of Justice. And, I come from a founding member state of the European Union. You will be surprised to hear that still in Italy, it's a matter of discussion whether supremacy is really supremacy, because it's not written in a text. It's just coming out of judgments of the ECJ. And of course, for a common lawyer, that is absurd. It's absurd because judge-made law is still law. So to some extent, The legal order of the European Union developed out of principles which are more akin to the tradition of the common law as opposed to that of the civil law. And that creates special tension, I would say, in a number of civil law jurisdictions, which indeed, as Advocate General Hogan said, are based on written law, predictability, and so on. And that might explain why, and I'm coming here to my second point, that might explain perhaps why Ireland has been playing so well within the EU legal system, actually quickly learning how to utilize and develop the instruments offered by the European Union from a legal perspective. And in fact, I think if we map some of the most remarkable developments that we have seen in the field of EU law over the last few months and years, I have to say that Ireland has been highly influential in promoting this development. And I want to mention here just three areas where cases originating from this jurisdiction have profoundly affected the development of EU law. The first area is economic and monetary union, which is one of the core competencies of the European Union, particularly for the countries that adopt the euro as their currencies. And here, one of the biggest judgments ever delivered by the European Court of Justice is the Pringle case, which was referred to the European Court of Justice by the Supreme Court of Ireland. And that case offered the Court of Justice of the European Union a major opportunity to clarify legal principles that underpin the functioning of economic and monetary union. Let me then mention a second area where, again, Ireland was really the leading player. The Irish law, Irish legal system was the leading player in the development of EU principles, and that's the field of privacy, which is so important to our digital era. And once again, here, it's Irish law that prompted two of the biggest cases by the ECJ, Digital Rights Ireland and SREMS, both referred by the High Court here in Dublin. And once more, it is litigation occurring at the national level in this jurisdiction that created the opportunity for the development of highly important legal principles at the judicial level in Europe, which are then applied to all other jurisdictions of the EU. And last but not least, since Patrick talked about the independence of judges, let me mention a third area where, again, Ireland is at the forefront of the development of EU law. This is the thorny, very important issue of the protection of the rule of law in a number of member states. As you know, the High Courts, again, in Ireland, referred the Selmer case to the European Court of Justice just a few months ago on the execution of a European arrest warrant in Poland, where unfortunately the governing majority has been packing courts and undermining the independence of the judiciary to the point that the Commission activated an Article 7 procedure against Poland. But again, it was an Irish judge using principles of Irish law that put the question whether a European arrest warrant could be executed vis-a-vis Poland in front of the European Court of Justice. And the case in Luxembourg is called, it's not called Selmer, unfortunately. I agree with you, Gerard, that this anonymization of names of ECJ cases is not a great idea. But anyway, the ECJ did provide an important ruling, which I think will shape the functioning of the EU legal order in the years ahead, particularly on these crucial issues of what to do with member states like Hungary and Poland, where the principles of independence of the judiciary are challenged by political forces. So all this shows, as I was trying to point out, that actually Ireland, despite being a small state, despite being a state with a common law tradition in a sea where all the other countries are using civil law principle, in fact, Ireland remains and already is an important voice in the development of EU law. And I have to say, this goes to the credit of the legal profession in these countries. And as a non-Irish, I think I'm definitely positioned to say so. Perhaps because of your common law tradition, you have been able to master and immediately take on board the principles of EU law and use it also strategically for litigation. So this is indeed to your credit, and that's a compliment. And I would think that after the UK will have left the European Union, this position that Ireland has acquired will not change. In fact, to some extent, it might even increase. And I want to point out to an example of what I'm thinking here. As you know, since the entry into force of the Treaty of Lisbon in 2009, appointments to the European Court of Justice and General Court of the European Union are subject to a vetting committee, the so-called 255 committee. The name comes from the provision of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union. And the 255 committee is a committee of national judges who are supposed, whose job is to evaluate and assess the legal credential of nominees to the court. And up until today, the tradition always was that a British judge would sit in the 255 committee in representation of the common law tradition. But Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice Frank Clark, actually pointed out to me very recently that as a result of Brexit, he himself has been called in to sit in the 255 committee representing the view of the common law in the selection of judges. And of course, that is a very important position because it's you know, it's a screening task for the choice of future judges of the European Court of Justice. And that again shows, in my view, how potentially this could increase the role of Ireland and of the Irish legal tradition in the development of EU law through the choice of future European Court Justice. So, as I said, indeed, I am not the best person to tell you how the common law will be affected by Brexit, but what I hope I've tried to make clear is that, in my view, Ireland will remain an important force and an important voice in the development of EU law, regardless of Brexit. Needless to say, however, there are major challenges ahead, and this is why, indeed, at DCU we created a Brexit Institute to explore, map, analyze these challenges, and perhaps identify some opportunities. So we'll just conclude by encouraging all those of you who are interested in this topic to engage with us. And thanks very much again for the invitation.